Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
Okay, hi everyone. Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Oh, calm down, AJ. You're popping your microphone all over the place.
I can't bloody find my pop filter. So if there's some hard peas in this episode, welcome to your 40s. Am I right, lads? I assume I'm not 40.
It sounds like you mean like urinating being difficult, right?
Like a hard pee. Yeah.
Right. I thought because I thought you meant like. You get better or more frequent erections, like, you know, your hard pee-pee. And I was like, famously the other way around.
Yeah. What does AJ think happens when you hit 40? Yeah. It gets worse, buddy. I don't know what you're expecting.
You're in for a bloody soft awakening.
Mm. Mm. God, imagine even at 28, though, like, I dream of being able to get boners as easily as I could when I was...
Boners out to here.
When I was like 13, you know, God, I couldn't bloody stop.
Couldn't put the thing down.
Now it's not like it's especially difficult, but I've got to wine and dine myself a bit more these days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, go on.
I'm saying. Welcome everybody. A grisly start to the Cult Popshow podcast this week, where of course we are doing film franchise fortnights, a little show that makes up most of what we do here, where every fortnight we watch and discuss a franchise, and we watch all the movies, no matter how many movies there are. Sometimes there's more than 14, and we have to do multiple movies a day to make it happen. That doesn't happen that often, but it has happened.
Sometimes there's less than one.
We don't have to do shit. And we come here and we talk about it. We talk about what's going to happen in the future. Well, that's at the end. We talk about what we thought of them.
It's the last thing we do.
Any fun facts or fun observations we had, and then lastly discuss where we think it could be headed. And today we are discussing the Riddick trilogy, Richard, or in a rare and stupid case of a franchise being mostly referred to by its second film's title, The Chronicles of Riddick is what this whole entire
like
franchise.
Like The Dark Knight.
Yeah, a little bit. Or the most recent
example.
No, it's
not a little bit. That's exactly...
People would call it Nolan Batman trilogy as well.
No, said The Dark Knight trilogy, yeah, that's absolutely...
Mm, you're so right. A recent example on the show, though, was the Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, Little Fockers is referred to a lot of places as the Fockers trilogy. So there's an example of it happening there. But
the
this...
Desperado trilogy?
Is it called that?
I don't know.
This is a series which currently consists...
The Spy Kids 2 trilogy?
The Mummy Returns trilogy? This is a series which currently consists of 3 films. Pitch Black in 2000, The Chronicles of Riddick.
Help, I can't see anything.
In 2004, and Riddick in 2013. And believe you me, we will be discussing the titling scheme
Titlies.
Of this franchise.
That's what we call them here on the podcast.
Yep.
Titlies.
We'll be discussing them later on. This series is most well known for launching the career of one Mark Sinclair, a.k.a. Vin Diesel, because that's a cooler name, a man who we've come to dunk on ruthlessly on this podcast over the years for his terrible performances, terrible taste in movies, and I've written embarrassingly earnest sincerity, which I would say works in some of his projects and doesn't work in others. And while the Riddick trilogy certainly is not as successful critically or financially as some of his other achievements, Riddick has the distinction of being the only one of Vin Diesel's main headlining franchises after Fast and Furious and Triple X, which we've yet to cover, in which he actually appears in all of the entries so far, because he doesn't appear in all the Fast and... It's weird to think Vin Diesel is not in every Fast and Furious.
Yeah, well, the only one he's not in is the second.
Correct, and he's barely in the third one.
Yeah, and there's actually a story that ties into this, I believe, about why he's in the third.
There is, and we will get to that. Never talking about it. While Fast and Furious has plenty of moments of genuinely enjoyable filmmaking, The Chronicles of Riddick feels like it has considerably less going for it. Its fan base is very niche and small. Its legacy is sporadic.
Very niche and small.
Its films aren't very good, and the main character, Vin Diesel's Riddick, is a straight-up pervert. So let's get into it, Richard, beginning with Pitch Black in 2000, directed by David Tui, I think is how you pronounce it. Tui? David Tui. That's right, yes it is. He's come up on the podcast before, do you remember where?
No, and I actually even looked it up when we rolled Riddick, to try and remember where it was, and I didn't see it then either.
Well, he was the screenwriter for Critters 2, The Main Course.
Very similar franchise.
How so?
Very. This is, strap in, boys and girls, because this is the new Critters, this franchise, the one that, it's just so mediocre and... you forget it while you're watching it. You can feel yourself not committing the films to memory. But there's an alternate universe where these are quite popular. You know, people are clamoring for a fourth Riddick movie.
The films themselves and Vin Diesel and David Tui kind of act like these are that super popular franchise. Yeah.
And the fact that they did a distant sequel, you know, is like... Okay. And it's not about... being a distant sequel. It doesn't address the fact that it's like picking up all of Riddick's back. It's just like, this is just Riddick's next adventure.
It's just another one. What do you think Pitch Black has on Rotten Tomatoes?
60.
60%. And what is this movie about, can you tell me?
There's this cargo ship which is transporting the prisoner named Richard, played by Vin Diesel, who he's this violent criminal. The spacecraft crashes, Richard escapes, and then there's these, what do they call it, bioraptors, which hunt them down. Huh?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I didn't know they were called that. I just called them monsters.
Yeah, it's on the Wikipedia page.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, and then so Richard has to team up with the crew of the spaceship to fight the monsters. It's a survival film, essentially.
So a couple of things just that you missed there. One is that the creatures can only attack during night or in the dark, but they're sensitive to light. And Riddick famously has had a shine job, which is someone took his eyes out and did something to them and put them back in. So now he can see in the dark. A very cool superpower. So during daytime, he wears these iconic sunglass goggles kind of things. And when he takes them off, I think it's a cool effect, that is the fact that his eyes glow. And I think there's some really nice shots in all three of these movies where all you can really see is the glow of his eyes as if he were a cat. You know, that sort of thing. I like the look, but I think it's a pretty mundane superpower that is also very specific, but it's specific for this
I don't think these are necessarily considered superhero movies, though.
No, but it's still a superpower, I guess. I just think it's where the title of this film kind of comes from, and it's definitely the most notable thing about Riddick as a character. And it just feels like such a silly idea. Also, I would like to point out that you have now referred to him as Richard more than he is referred to as Richard in the trilogy itself. You said it three times, and I think they only say it twice. They don't even say Richard in Chronicles of Riddick. But there
Chronicles
you go.
Of Richard.
The Pitch Black was filmed in the same location as a film we've covered before. Do you know what film this is?
Can you tell me the location?
The Australian outback.
Crocodile Dundee.
No, actually, as may as well be
Mad Max.
Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome specifically is used the same location. What did you think of Pitch Black, Richard? Did you love it?
Should I fluff it? There's a High School Musical 3 reference for you.
Oh, I thought you were making a porn joke, and I was like, I don't get it, but I'm sure it's a reference to something someone will
understand. I'm sure when those boners hit once I reach 40.
God. If only. Can't wait.
Yeah, I did not like this film very much. There was a retroactive charm added to it by watching the other films and them being worse. Mm-hmm. That was like, oh no, you don't know how good we had it, you know, in the first one. Mm. And there is, there's a low budget charm to it. And also that, like, because even not knowing it was filmed in the Australian outback, it has that very, like, a few of the characters are Australian, but, and it has that real.
More than one, like, of the characters is Australian in an otherwise American film.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, this was obviously filmed in Australia then.
Yeah.
Why else would they be there?
But yeah, it feels like that very much kind of, that like low budget Australian filmmaking that there's a charm to. Like, you things like, what is it, like Wolf Creek and obviously Mad Max. Mm. And I feel like, I feel like I went through a phase of watching like obscure Australian horror movies, but the only one I can remember is this movie called Undead, which is a very strange film. But
you talked about recently as well.
Not on the podcast. I messaged you about it.
I was listening back to...
Oh, I think I did.
I think it was it was the Fear Street episode, and you mentioned it then.
Oh, nice. That movie has been kept alive by me constantly talking about how obscure it is and how, like, otherwise forgettable it would be, other than the fact that I've had to verify many times that it did exist.
Yeah.
And now it's become somewhat of a meme.
What, in your own life?
Yeah, my own life. The film has a low budget charm to it. There's some problematic stuff I didn't really like. I don't know. Like, Riddick's not a particularly fun character to watch, I didn't think.
Well, there you go. I agree. I didn't think this film was especially bad. But starting in the first film, it kicks off a very strange issue which plagues all three movies and has basically defined my position on discussing the franchise, you know, here to forward. All three movies have, like, a pretty neat sci-fi movie concept hidden within them. And it takes too long to get to, the second one especially, and it's over too quick, and it's easily the only good thing about the movie. So what I've done for this episode, Richard, is I've tried to reverse engineer what I think was probably the log line used to secure funding for each of these films that was not delivered on in the final product, right? So here is what I would, if I was a movie producer, here's what I would invest in if this was pitched to me, and this is not, absolutely not what the action movie is, right? Here's the log line. After crash landing on a desolate planet, a spaceship crew must survive an onslaught from a swarm of monsters who can only attack in darkness. When night falls across the entire world, the crew must put their trust in Riddick, a prisoner they were transporting with genetically enhanced eyes which allow him to see in the dark. That's the movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's maybe not the most unique idea, but it's got a twist and like a double twist that they have to, the person they have to trust is the one person they can't trust.
They can't, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's, yeah, and like part of that, the simplicity of this one and kind of the third one as well is why I quite, you know, I thought I didn't like it at the time. I still don't, but it's my favorite one. That, like, realizing, it's the simplicity of one and three, relative simplicity.
What do you think of like, do you agree, did you notice that watching it? I feel like you and I are attuned to these sorts of, like, high concepts, these crunchy high concepts hidden in
You watch a film and you think to yourself, this isn't a rotten idea, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I was thinking. But yeah, the thing I was going to ask just then actually was, what was your knowledge of Riddick as a franchise beforehand?
When it came out on DVD, I saw The Chronicles of Riddick. I didn't remember right. it very. I didn't even remember it enough to tick on Letterboxd that I'd seen it before because it was yeah. just a very, very vague memory. And I remember hearing after seeing that the movie that it was a sequel to a movie called Pitch Black, and it sort of existed in the background of my life as something I've always been very disinterested in.
That's 100% it. I was the character of Riddick. I always thought like that he was some kind of alien, and just like literally all I know of these was the posters, you know. And those glasses, I think, remind me of Abe Sapien from from Hellboy.
Yeah.
And so I think I always just put like those two in my head and probably amalgamated because I've also never seen Hellboy. And so, those two characters kind of conflated each other in a way, and I wasn't sure where one ended and the other began. But I think just to find out, I think maybe in the last year or so I had, because by the time we rolled the franchise, I was like, Riddick's just a guy, right? I mean, he has the eye thing, but yeah, like.
Well, so in the first one, he says that he sort of makes out like the eye thing is like a genetic enhancement. Apparently, when I was researching this, I missed this watching the film. But in the Chronicles of Riddick, they say that he's actually part of an ancient race who are born with eyes like that, which is so much less cool than he had it done to him. I think that's a way cooler idea that he you know, went to some back alley and paid someone for the super dangerous eye altering operation.
Take my eyes, but not the shirt.
It's similar to you mixing this up with Abe Sapien from Hellboy. For some reason, Riddick and Blade, which is a trilogy we have covered, occupy the same part of my brain. And I don't quite know why. Maybe it's because they're from around the same time and are both like, this is cool, right? Although, and Blade is still kind of cool, I think. Whereas this is very lame. This is very Vin Diesel chic. which is what I call lame. Something that he thinks is cool that I don't think is cool. Yeah. You mentioned before that there was some problematic stuff that you didn't like in this film. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so it's funny. The only thing I knew about this...
Do you want to give a content warning, maybe? What are we talking about? Like transphobia?
Yeah. Just problematic things around transphobia. just a general transphobia kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, so there's a scene, but like the character's not explicitly transgender in the movie's defense.
Okay, but people, that terminology wasn't in the zeitgeist at the time. And so it's operating completely blind. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing I knew about Pitch Black was, I didn't know which film it was under. The only thing I knew about the franchise was that there's a scene in which Riddick smells a girl's period.
Yeah.
And it says that she's bleeding or something like that. They're smelling blood and that's why they're being chased, because of the girl bleeding.
Because the monsters can smell blood. That's how they find them in the dark.
Yeah. And so the way the scene actually plays out in the film is that he says it and they're like, wait a minute, I'm not bleeding. And then he's like, not her, and then points to this character who's presented as male up until this point
named
in the film,
Jack.
Known by Jack. And the storyline of the film isn't necessarily that Jack's transgender. It's that like Jack has presented as male like for this mission, like just because they thought it would be easier. Which again is like a, you know, if Jack was actually this complex trans character that had all these things, but it's like, this is just written by a cishet white man who wanted to use that as a twist, you know? So it's hard to treat the gender identity of the character with the utmost respect because it's not there in the text.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, this is what happened to the character, which, you know, wouldn't necessarily happen that way in real life. But yeah, it's just this like really gross scene. And then everyone's like, Oh, Jack, you fucking bitch, you lied to us. You're a woman, and that's gross.
Jack's also like, 13, by the way.
Yeah, that's worth pointing out.
I don't know if we mentioned that.
And it's like, yeah, everyone's just mad at Jack for tricking them.
It's a strange scene. So the movie ends with all the characters are getting picked off one by one, and it ends with three of them escaping on a starship. That includes Riddick, Jack / Kira, and I understand we're trying to be sensitive here, but because the movie refers to this person as Kira and presents them as female going forward, I'm probably going to say Kira for the next movie. A guy played by Keith David, who is a Muslim, like a Muslim priest.
Was he in this?
Yeah, Keith David's in them. which is also another interesting wrinkle, and it's similar to Mad Max again, in that like they're from Earth. These are characters that are humans from Earth.
They've probably played Game Boys.
And in the sequels, like, that feels like such a distant, like, they're just clearly from a mystical alien race.
Probably don't even remember the Game Boys.
Probably not. You said something really interesting to me when you were watching these, when you were talking about how you didn't like them, and you said that these are fantasies disguised as sci-fis.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this more in the second film, because this film is like a sci-fi horror more than anything. And it was my only real talking point for the second film.
I've got dumb IMDb trivia for the rest of Pitch Black, so we can...
All right, well, let's tease... Yeah, like, I do want to go deeper into the whole fantasy thing and Chronicles.
All right, we'll put a pin in it. So to finish off our conversation about the strange, strange movie that is Pitch Black, we've got some dumb IMDb trivia, because usually IMDb trivia is user submitted, so a lot of it's real stupid. But I did find a piece of IMDb trivia that is kind of interesting, and then it has a dumb... clearly written by a person at the end of the comment. It says, the full-size spaceship stage used in the movie can be found in the Australian outback mining town of Coober Pedy in South Australia. Australia, thank you. Bought by a local businessman soon after filming was completed. It sits out in the open. Entry to the site is on Hutchison Street opposite Winch Street. It is marked and can be seen clearly on Google Maps. More information can be found on the web. Okay, thank you. But I did think that was kind of cool, that the set from Pitch Black just sits out in the open, and you can, like,
opposite
Australia,
whatever street.
Yeah, Winch Street. It's like it's like a bogan version of Hobbiton. So I also found this in the trivia section. The film is developed from David Toohey's unused idea for Alien 3 involving a space prison, and then followed by this, the character of Riddick was originally a woman in a rough draft of the script. And so then I was like, Riddick, Ripley. Is Riddick just Ripley? And the answer to that question, Richard, is no, because apparently the film was originally titled Nightfall and about a female outlaw named Tara Krieg with tribal tattoos and enhancements from her interstellar tribe of barbarians. Imam, who is Keith David's character, was named Noah Toth, a member of a technology-based version of Christianity, and he had no pilgrims. There was no eclipse, only a two-month day and two-month night, and there was no geologist's outpost, only ancient ruins, and instead of aliens, the villains were the ghosts of the creatures who built the ruins trying to defend their homeworld. There was no escape ship but a distress beacon, and Tara, Carolyn Fry, Jack, Noah Toth, and Paris were all supposed to make it off the alien world called Hades instead of M6117. John's morphine addiction, the cannon fodder teens, and Solar Orrery and the geologist camp were added by David Toohey.
Interesting. That's one of those franchises, that's one of those ideas you hear, and it's like, it is just immediately more interesting if Riddick's female.
Sure, yeah.
Like, that's immediately a cooler movie.
And you remove Vin Diesel, which is something I would like to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's just a bonus.
Every movie.
But yeah, like the idea of this horrific prisoner being transported that ends up saving the day. Like, yeah, we've seen 1,000 fucking Vin Diesels do that. Let's see. It's time to play our favorite game.
How old is Vin Diesel? And what are some other actresses the same age as him who were active in 2000?
Yeah, 54-year-old actresses. Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
Laura Dern.
Fuck yeah, dude. A 2000 Laura Dern being like a grizzled. That'd be cool.
Who else we got here? Carrie Ann Moss, actually, she'd be great.
Yep, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. What? Right off the back of The Matrix, too? God.
Yeah.
The Matrix.
Well, the first Matrix.
T-O-O. Speaking of two, though, I've got another dumb IMDb trivia section post here.
Carrie Ann Moss is Riddick. It's so much cooler.
That's good. In one of the shots showing cargo pods being jettisoned from the ship before the crash, one of the pods is numbered 2E. A joking reference to David Tui from the effects crew. Two more pieces of dumb IMDb trivia before we're moving on. Riddick's origins. Oh no, sorry, I mentioned that one already. So that's the fact that in the Chronicles of Riddick, his origins changed. The last piece of dumb IMDb trivia I've got here is this came out on the same day as Boiler Room, another film with Vin Diesel in it, which is written with no punctuation. They haven't capitalized Boiler Room. They haven't capitalized Vin Diesel's name. There's no punctuation. And now we move on to The Chronicles of Riddick 2004, also directed by David 2E. And what do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
This is it's like 23 or something like that?
29.
Yeah.
29? what is this movie about?
God.
it's like how John Wick 1 is like the simple idea, and John Wick 2 is like his dog gets killed. John Wick 2 is like, let's expand the world, which I do like in John Wick, but in this it's just like, oh, this is a rough universe you're trying to explain to me.
It's like there's like two opposing forces, and oh God.
So,
can you take over? What's the log line for this film?
I'll get to that in a second. This is what the synopsis is when you look at this. This is the shortest one I could find.
Yeah.
Was Richard Riddick, a convict with a price on his head, must face the Necromongers, a race of religious fanatics who are systematically conquering planets. I didn't know the movie was about that until I watched it. What did you think of this one?
I really, really didn't like this film. Okay, let's be real for a second. So, I've said a few times, like recently, that I, like genres aren't bad, but movies are bad. But I also often say that I don't like fantasy, or Sword and Sandal, especially. And I've also often made fun of you for not understanding heist movies.
Okay.
I think like fantasy movies for me are just like the same thing. It's like I refuse to understand them is my problem. My brain just goes like, oh, we have to get to the Dragonfell. I'm just like, I don't care. Like, and it's my brain just shuts down, and I don't understand a lot. Like, I can follow lore and stuff like that, but when it's like, like you look at like fucking Lord of the Rings and just like how they released a map of the world, and people are like, I know the date for the Amazon series, like I know the date this takes place because of the map, and it's like because they've read all the extended lore and all this stuff, and it's like, and sci-fi like barely does that. Like, I like sci-fi, I don't like I've never really gone into Star Trek, I don't really like Star Wars that much, again because it's like there's just these massive pieces of lore that you're expected to like to buy into, and oh, there's a line here that if you know what it means and stuff, and it's like I can get into these, and like it sounds hypocritical, I guess, because you hear me talk about like the MCU or whatever, but it's like when you're talking about like worlds and you know, like whole landscapes and fantasy movies, it's very easy to shut off, kind of thing.
Well, because fantasy is about memorizing history, whereas sci-fi is like, here's a cool concept.
I think that's part of it as well, because I've actually, yeah, like I've never been that interested in like ancient history, like modern history, you know, like world wars, shit like that, I find interesting. But when it's like medieval times, like I never found that interesting in school. I don't know why. Maybe it's just had bad teachers for it. And so that translate, the cool version of that is fantasy. And so without buying into the lame version of it when I was a kid. And so this is like, this is a sci-fi movie. And it's, and I was talking to someone at work today, about it today, who I was, you know, trying out my material on.
It do be like that sometimes.
But yeah, I was like, yeah, talking about it, and I said like I was saying about how I didn't like the second one because it's just a fantasy movie in sci-fi skin. He was like, all sci-fi is fantasy, and I was like, yeah, but this one's so much worse. Like,
I don't think all sci-fi is fantasy. When I think of sci-fi, I think of like Alien. I don't think that's fantasy at all.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I mean, like it's fantasy in the sense that it's not real.
Okay, fine.
But it is, yeah, like this one is like you could replace the dragons with the monsters with dragons, you know. You could replace anything with like any spaceship with like a fucking horse, and it's, oh, you've got a fantasy movie, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was like, and then you've, on top of that, you've got this like super convoluted plot and just like all the shit feels that you need to memorize. And there's all these like factions and wars that have been spanning centuries. And I just, it's a turn your brain off movie in the sense that I turned my brain off and I went, I'm not following this.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I feel my initial reaction to this movie was a lot more positive than it has become in the days since seeing it. And I think there's a lot to admire because, or at least I thought maybe there was a lot to admire because the world building is seemingly so thorough. Sorry, trying to always pronounce that.
That's okay.
It's interesting. Take your time. But what it really feels like is a high budget version of like that friend you have in high school who was writing a novel. You know, and he's like, let me tell you about my novel. Or like a D&D campaign. And they're super proud of their tedious lore. And the movie feels like someone is telling you their story and they're way more interested in it than anyone.
Yeah, hard out.
So that, and that is kind of, knowing that Vin Diesel is into D&D and knowing he had some kind of direction with what was actually happening, he wasn't just acting in them.
Was he a producer on it? Yeah,
I can't remember, but I couldn't, he didn't write them, which I thought was interesting because it kind of feels like
he produced them, so
But once again, there is an interesting movie hidden inside this 134-minute lore dump, and it's even shorter in this one. So here is my reverse-engineered logline for what this film should have been, right?
Tell me what it is, baby.
After learning that Kira has been imprisoned beneath the surface of the scalding hot planet of Crematoria, Riddick must break into the notoriously ruthless penitentiary and help Kira and a crew of other convicts escape while outrunning the obliterating heat of the planet's rising sun. This, of course, being our second franchise this year where characters have to outrun the sunrise after the mummy returns. So it's the opposite of the first one, and it's so buried in there, and it's probably about a 40-minute long sequence, and I got to it and I was like, this should be the entire fucking movie. I don't want to see Carl Urban. I don't want to see Judy Dench be an elemental. An elemental? Yeah. What are we doing? It's so hard going.
Can you sorry, just dumb it down for me.
Yeah.
How is this the opposite of the first film?
Sorry, okay, so the first one is they have to move in the dark and the creatures can only attack them in the dark and they've got the guy who can see in the dark, right?
Yeah.
This one is the danger is now in the light, so they've got to stay in the dark as opposed to, like, it's the light that kills them, not the dark that kills them.
Right, yeah. Cool.
And which is like, You pitch that and you go, it's the first one, but we're reversing it. But it's like such a small chapter, such a tiny chronicle of Riddick that it's just one sequence in the movie, whereas it should be the whole movie, because he does go to get Kira from this prison. Well, he doesn't go to get her, he goes there just because. and finds her there, but he should be going to rescue her, and it should be about this, and it shouldn't be about the necromongers eating planets. It shouldn't be about any of this shit I do not care about. It takes, so it takes 59 minutes in pitch black for the story of them that I've been pitching to actually happen, right? That's too long. Yeah, this happens probably the same amount of time and lasts for 40 minutes, and it's over too quick. And I think that's a good idea for a sequel to this other movie I've made up that doesn't actually exist. This version of this movie. I also thought this movie gets really horny out of nowhere.
These are
relatively tame movie, but then in the scene.
Oh, just wait to see what happens when you hit 40.
Movie's
so horny, but I had nothing to do with it.
In the space of about 20 minutes, there is an incredibly uncomfortable and cringy makeout scene between Carl Urban and Tandy Newton, which is like you
Tandaway
see
Newton.
This, is it really? Is that how you say it?
She recently revealed that like her name was spelt wrong on like her first credit, so. It just in the last year, she's like, no, fuck you. It's Tandaway. That's
Tandaway.
How it's supposed to be.
All right, well, Tandaway. Regardless, this is one of those, like, makeout scenes where, like, the actors are, like, licking each other's lips. Like, that's how close it gets. Mm. It's so gross. And then there's another part where one of the women who is part of the mercenary crew who capture Riddick tries to sneak up on him while he's sleeping, and he traps her leg between his knees and then tells her that she grinds her teeth in her sleep, and it's sexy. And, you know, it's obviously shot in a very, like, way that, you know, accentuates her figure and stuff like that. And then finally, when Riddick finds Kira in underground of Crematoria, the prison planet, he picks her up and she like pisses him off or threatens him. And so it's sort of like the equivalent of like him like pinning her to the wall. He picks her up and holds her against the wall by putting his arm between her legs and lifting her up. And this is so, like, not only is this like a potentially like this is potentially a trans person you knew. It's also someone you've known since they were a child. And it's just such an unnecessarily like sexy, but also like sexual assault. I couldn't believe the scene, and it's so gross. It's such a gross moment. And I can't believe people don't talk about how horrific that. You know that scene in Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Mac picks D up from the crotch? Yeah. He's doing that to her. Like, that's what he does. It's just not consented to. It's very, very creepy. Yeah. Creepy stuff. Creepy stuff.
Creepy stuff. And probably just shit Vin Diesel does in his real life as well.
Yeah, exactly. If he thinks this is cool, then he probably has done similar things. Apparently, in her autobiography and furthermore, Dame Judi Dench, who again is in this movie, says that she never really understood what was going on in the movie, but she enjoyed the experience of making it and she thought the sets were great, which I think is awesome that the Dame Judi Dench autobiography, which is probably bought by a demographic who have never heard of this movie, has a section dedicated to the Chronicles.
People that
of
couldn't wait for Philomena to come out.
Allegedly, Vin Diesel wanted Dame Judi Dench to play Arion and went to great lengths to get her. He was a longtime fan of Dench, and he had her dressing room filled with bouquets of flowers and also advised her that they could not begin casting the movie until she agreed to accept the role. Very strange. I guess.
And now he works with like Helen Mirren.
Yeah,
and
he likes his elderly classical actresses. Dumb IMDb trivia, one piece for Chronicles of Riddick. Writer and director David Toohey decided not to set this movie again on the desert planet from which Riddick, Imam, and Jack escaped at the end of Pitch Black, and again may make a deadly encounter with the planet's flesh-eating alien creatures. He wanted to create for the character of Riddick a mythology and decided to have Riddick go up against the Necromongers. So it's just like, he decided to make a sequel that was about...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Something. Like, this is obviously like a clip from an interview with him.
Yeah.
And one of these diehard Chronicles of Riddick stands is like, oh my god, I'm gonna add this to the trivia page. Do you have any more thoughts on the Chronicles of Riddick?
No. I barely had the thoughts I've already shared.
Well, let's drop all but one of those words and talk about Riddick in 2013. Mm. Also directed by David Toohey. What's our stats on franchises directed completely by one person?
It's in like the 20s, I believe. It's right. Higher than you'd think, I think. But it gets muddier when you talk about, you know, what counts as a franchise and whatnot. Mm. I think at one point I counted how many episodes we've done where they're all the same person.
It is. I guess it's less interesting that this is another one and more that like a series like Riddick has that. Like this very disconnected.
Vin's like, I'm not coming back if David Toohey's not.
Yeah, it feels like competing visions with each sequel, and yet they're all directed by the same guy. Do you know what this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
It's like just under fresh.
Yeah, 57. Mm. So overall, a bit of a stinker of a franchise critically. Mm. So what is this one about?
So this one is like Riddick has now been. Richard, sorry, has been left for dead on another desert planet. And he kind of just goes about his life for the first, like, fucking large chunk of the film. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, his, like, he manages to, like activate some kind of beacon or, like, send out some kind of message to get help and ends up bringing two people. One's, like, mercenaries that are, you know, to actually help him, and the other is who is it?
Well, no, they're not trying to help him. He sets off a beacon which brings, like, he's got a bounty on his head, and it brings one that just want to collect the bounty, and one who have got like personal stakes in capturing him. And the sort of the clincher is there's a storm a coming, and with the storm brings these monsters that can only survive in water, and so they have to team together to escape. This film has interesting ties to one other big Vin Diesel franchise, because his cameo appearance at the end of the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift was actually the result of a deal that Vin Diesel made with Universal in order to get the rights to Riddick back so that they could make a third film, because I don't think Chronicles of Riddick did too well, and so they weren't eager to make it, so he was like, I'll just give it to me and I'll do it. And this, you know, I'm sure you've heard this anecdote before, and I don't know if it's true necessarily, but Vin Diesel was apparently actually banking on Riddick being like this iconic cash cow of an intellectual property that he could have his name attached to, which is pretty, I think that's kind of funny that Riddick was the one he was banking on and not Fast and Furious, at least at this time. Diesel also had to mortgage his house to pay for this movie. He said that if it didn't get made, he would have been homeless.
Shame.
What did you think of this one?
Again, it has like kind of a charm to it, like similar to the first one. I think again that like the first one's like horror movie, everyone stick together and survive, and this one being like team of jacked up mercs. Like fighting something that's also like because the first one is almost the like ethnically diverse crew of a spaceship get picked off one by one movie. And this one's almost like Army of the Dead, which I haven't actually seen, but it's that kind of thing of like jacked up mercs like doing something, and it's and Dawn of the Dead is kind of like that as well. In some ways
it's kind of like Predator.
Predator is a great example. But yeah, and it's like, again, it's like, well, there's a simplicity to that I enjoy, that like no matter what happens, you can boil it down to team of mercs fighting something. And you can't do that with Chronicles of Riddick. You could be like, yeah, it's a sprawling fantasy epic, and I'm like, yeah, well, that doesn't interest me as much as this simple
yeah
as this simple like group you can come to care about. you know, getting picked off one by one, whether they're just your average, everyday, ethnically diverse crew of a spaceship, or if they're mercenaries.
Mm. Yeah, and this one had, I think, a considerably smaller budget, which is probably accounting for why it's not as sprawling as the Chronicles of Riddick.
Riddick needs a low budget, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is probably my favorite one of the three. I really hated. Oh, there are some problematic stuff we'll talk about. But I quite enjoyed the first act, which was just Riddick wandering around the planet trying to survive. Cat thing. Yeah, I was like, this is kind of interesting. And it looks all right. Like, the special effects aren't bad. And it's kind of interesting. And it feels almost like a video game. When it switched to become Riddick as Predator and picking off these mercenaries that are coming to kill him, not a bad idea, you know? Mm. Like, maybe not as quiet and understated as the first act. But here is my reverse-engineered logline for this film. Mm-hmm. While desperately trying to escape a hostile planet, Riddick finds himself the target of both a gang of bounty hunters and a crew of professional mercenaries out for revenge. However, no one is safe from the approaching rainstorm, which brings with it an unstoppable, violent force. Right? Again...
Sure.
That out of all three of them, this is the one that most closely adheres to what I thought it should have been.
Yeah, right.
And so I'll give it points for that. It's maybe a bit too long, I'll get to this later actually. But what this movie gave me that I didn't ask for, but I'm so grateful that it gave me this, was a wonderful new entry into my Vin Diesel thinks he's way cooler than he is canon. Because in this movie, he literally turns a lesbian character straight, and he does this by publicly complimenting the color of her nipples in front of everyone, which he saw because he was spying on her. And then he also says he's going to go, quote, balls deep in her when she asks him to real sweet like. This is dialogue in the movie. And I get that 2013 was right at the end of this kind of machoism being seen as like a cool thing. But this still feels very creepy and out of line even for 2013.
Well, Vin Diesel's got that whole, that Tom Cruise, we don't want to see him as a romantic... I don't want to see Vin Diesel as a sexual being.
No, and I think he does not get that. I haven't seen Triple X.
Vin Diesel just wants to fuck.
I haven't seen Triple X through The Return of Xander Cage, but like the girl from the Vampire Diaries. The girl from the Vampire Diaries is in that, and she like has like this massive crush on him because it's, oh my god, it's Xander Cage. And it's like, how hot do you think you are, Vin Diesel? That's such a mean thing to say, but it comes into play in this and Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious, where like we talked about how like at the end of the fourth Fast and Furious movie, how like these people in his life become fugitives to break him out of prison. And it's like, he's not that good of a friend to you. I don't think it would be worth going this far and going to this extent. And in this one, it's like Vin Diesel actually thinks he is so irresistible that even the sexual orientation of what's the actress's name? She's in The Mandalorian. What's her name?
Katie Sackhoff.
Even her sexual orientation is no match for his irresistible charm. And he's all like, because he compliments her toenails, her toenail polish. And he's like, I love the toenails, by the way.
Oh, when did these turn into beautiful toenails?
It's exactly like that. And she sort of responds like, okay. And then he's like, matches your nipples. And it's like, like, and the look on his face, and he thinks he's so cool. And then he says the thing about him going balls deep in her after he kills everyone else in the room, and that she's going to ask him real sweet like. And like, this would be one thing if it's just one creepy old man's power fantasy, but then at the end he gets rescued by her and they're strapped together flying up into the spaceship, and she says, I've got something to ask you real sweet like. And it's like, no, you're too good for him, you're too good for him, don't give him this,
don't what ask him to go balls deep in you. He doesn't deserve it.
Dave Bautista is in this movie, which makes it our second franchise this year to feature a pre-big break acting role from Bautista after the Scorpion King 3 Battle for Redemption, both of which came out very close to Guardians of the Galaxy to the point where he was probably already in talks, at least, if not filming.
Yeah.
I thought this was interesting as well because he shares the screen with Vin Diesel, and a couple of years ago he publicly trashed on Fast and Furious saying he'd rather be in good movies. But then I remember they star in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah.
It's actually not that interesting. Or like, but it is possible, I guess, that they never met face to face in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both part of the main lineup in Guardians of the Galaxy, and Dave Bautista's just like, yeah, your fucking movies suck.
Your movies are shit.
I've got some dumb IMDb trivia to finish our chat on Riddick. Vin Diesel wanted the movie to be shot on 35mm film, but due to the film's low budget paired with the large number of visual effects shots, the movie had to be shot digitally, which is not only like, yeah, of course it has to be shot digitally, it's entirely on a green screen, but also I love that he thinks, you know, the next chapter in the Riddick series, we've got to shoot it on 35mm. David Tui added a subtle film grain to comfort. Yeah. It's like, hey, we can't afford it, but hey, look, I can put a little filter on it.
Here, let me drag it on.
Does that look good? And he's like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Paired with this, another piece of dumb IMDb trivia, Vin Diesel's original vision was to have the Chronicles of Riddick become like J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth. Pitch Black was to serve like The Hobbit and to be a standalone film to establish the universe and to have a trilogy of Riddick serving like Lord of the Rings. Very self-important. It keeps going with this piece of trivia. The character of Riddick is considered to be a mix of iconic 1980s action characters John Rambo, Snake Plissken, and Conan the Barbarian. In his backstory, Riddick was a soldier in the military and became a notorious wanted criminal who escaped from several prisons. Riddick later discovered he is the race of a warrior called the Furians, who'd be slain by the Lord Marshal, blah, 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 blah. Bunch of shit I don't care about. This is the next two pieces are interesting here. When the film was advertised on Sky Television in New Zealand on the IMDb trivia page, a voiceover stated the line that the film was the final chapter in the Riddick trilogy. A fourth film entitled Furia was announced and was in development. It was rumored that the fourth film was about Riddick finally finding his home planet. Another piece of IMDb trivia for Riddick reads, in New Zealand, the film was given the restricted 16 rating for its graphic violence, profanity, and nudity. First of all, neither of those things are trivia. One of them is just the rating for the film. One of them's saying...
A factual error. A tiny country no one gives a shit about.
Yeah, but like this is clearly written by New Zealand's biggest Riddick fan, right? Who was like, oh, I want to write a piece of trivia, but what's something only I would know? Oh, well, the New Zealand Sky TV kind of incorrectly said that this was the final chapter, so he has to put that context in there to prove that it's actually that. Very fun to read. Very fun to see your own country's name. Other countries don't realize this. Very rare to read New Zealand's name anywhere.
Yeah. You know? I often wonder like what other countries care as much as we do. Like Papua New Guinea, do you reckon they give a shit?
I feel like New Zealand wasn't canon until 2000, though.
Well, that's just insane.
It wasn't global canon. The world didn't
the
know
The wizard was at the height of his power.
The world didn't know about New Zealand until Lord of the Rings. I don't think so. I think it became like a right, main cast member after Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's a main cast member yet.
No.
No, it is. It's like, okay. We're like a fun guest star.
Sure. Final piece of dumb IMDb trivia and final thing I have to say about Riddick. In order to prepare for his role in the film, Vin Diesel spent 4 months in the woods. I don't think that's in the woods. I don't think that's true, but if it is, it's very funny because this film is not set in the woods. All right. We're going to do something a little different now, Richard. A little bit saucy. We're going to combine two segments into one, baby, because we talk about titles a lot on this podcast, but we also continue the franchise. And for the first time ever, I'm combining those into one segment. So this is usually a segment where we either talk about the titles of a franchise or we pitch our own sequels going forward. And I've done both in one go for my Continue the Franchise. It's just worth talking about is one thing, basically. Sure. So these have got to be some of the most incongruent sequel titles we've ever covered, surely, right? Like, joining the ranks
the incongruity alone.
The incongruity. It joins the ranks of Final Destination, where the fourth film was just The Final Destination, and then they went back to numbers for the fifth and final film. And Vin Diesel's Fast and Furious, famously terrible titles. And it drives me crazy, because this is a textbook example of me being like, am I truly the weird one for thinking these titles are crazy? Is it truly me? It feels so obvious that these are bad titles and play with each other. They're not bad titles on their own, but like, is it truly just me that thinks Pitch Black, The Chronicles of Riddick, are titles that do not flow into each other and make it very confusing? Each title feels like it's the first one in the franchise. Each title feels like it's from a different series or playing a completely different game. So for the first time ever, I'm combining our talk of titles with Continue the Franchise, because my Continue the Franchise is actually just a remolding and reshaping of these films, how they're presented, their marketing, which I've already sort of done as I've pitched you the log lines, because they're a mess and definitely need a haircut. So firstly, if we're in love with The Chronicles of Riddick as a moniker, you can keep that as, you know, Star Wars.
The franchise name.
That's the franchise title. The first film can remain Pitch Black. I think that's an enigmatic, creepy kind of title. And if you want The Chronicles of Riddick, Pitch Black, or Pitch Black, The Chronicles of Riddick.
Which is what it's called on like DVD releases.
Yeah, which is funny now that it's like the first one's got a subtitle and the second one doesn't. So I'm recutting this film, so it's essentially exactly what I said before. It's no more than 25 minutes pass before it gets to the main conceptual set piece of there's monsters in the dark and we're stuck in the dark. So that's the recut of the first one. Next, I'm going to shave the second film down severely. We're cutting out all of this necromonger bullshit and just having it be what I stated before. It's the opposite of the first one, whereas instead of afraid of the dark, now they're afraid of the light.
Riddick, outrun the sun.
Because of this concept, I'm retitling this one. You got Pitch Black, Blinding White, or The Chronicles of Riddick, Blinding White. I feel like they play very well. And if you're a fan of Pitch Black and you hear a sequel's coming out and it's called Blinding White, you're like, what the heck? That's so cool.
How would you feel about Blinding Light?
Yep, that's all good. I was thinking colors, but it's harder when it gets to the third film, as you'll see. So Blinding Light, I also thought of Bright White, but I think I like Blinding, playing with the vision thing a bit more.
Like, or like instead of pitch, it's like tone or timbre.
Timbre White. and for the after Black and White, though, we are left with kind of like there's no obvious title for the third film, which, to be honest, I could probably happily keep as is. I don't think I need to cut it down too much. Maybe trim down the first act of Riddick surviving or release it as like a pre-release short film, because they really love
it. Yeah, no, it's like Blade Runner 2048.
Yeah, yeah. And there's already examples of there's precedent for that, which we'll talk about in a minute. Before watching the film, I was trying to think. I thought of the blinding light thing before watching it, and so I was trying to think of like where's the next. And I thought Crystal Clear would fit, but the film as it is couldn't really be called Crystal Clear for any obvious reason. But
well, you like as if they're monsters that hunt in the water are like crystal blue.
Yeah, sure. Yep, that's cool. I like that. Because you're right, so if in the first one they're outrunning darkness and the second one they're outrunning sunlight, they're outrunning a rainstorm in this one, essentially. Again, it's not what they're doing for three quarters of the movie, but it is eventually what they're trying to do. And so I thought...
Something about grey, maybe? Yeah.
So I've got Heavy Rain. I know there's a game called Heavy Rain, but Heavy Rain fits the kind of idea. I've got Stormbreak. If you wanted to play with the fact that it's sort of set in a drought, you could call it Bone Dry, Dead Heat. I struggled a lot with this one. I like some of the ones that you've suggested.
So is this all the Chronicles of Riddick, Blinding Light, the Chronicles of Riddick?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. I thought, because it's sort of a return to escaping from darkness when Riddick is Predator, because they're scared of the dark now, you could call it Black Again or Back in Black. I don't have the perfect title for this movie. I would love to hear either if you've got ideas or if our listeners want to say something in our Discord. Would love to talk about this with people. I think this is a fun creative writing exercise of what do you do when you want to make a trilogy have consistent titles, but the first ones are opposites from each other. What do you call the third one, you know? And I was trying to, the theme is the thing that stops you from seeing, right? That's what each movie is called. So that was sort of where I was going.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's like Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight is the other, like, the practical example of what you're, the problem you're kind of talking about.
For what it's worth, Riddick's original title was Dead Man Stalking. That's his working title. Do you want to pitch your continue the franchise?
So initially I came here like thinking that, like, for the one of the first times ever, you legitimately could make a really interesting prequel about Riddick. Like, it's a character, like, I mean, fucking obvious, and then you get to recast as well. But, like, it's not a franchise I care about. It's not a franchise I would be excited if they made a prequel. But, like, the idea of this criminal selling his fucking eyes, or, like, upgrading his eyes. Well, obviously, we're sticking with the pitch black explanation of why his eyes like that, not the Chronicles of Riddick one. But, yeah, like set on this, like, in the underground of this, like, sci-fi planet. Like, I fully imagine it like you did, that it's, like, this back-alley operation. I find that that's so much more interesting than any of the stupid bullshit going on in the Chronicles of Riddick. But then you mentioned a female reboot, and it's, like, that's so much cooler. I would love to see a female reboot of Riddick.
Nice.
Of Pitch Black. We're starring Carrie Ann Moss.
Specifically, listen to the words I'm saying, Hollywood. This is exactly what I want. It's like when you're telling your parents what you want for Christmas, but it's like you want a specific version of something. Have you ever done that? And it's like, if you can't get me this version, don't get me another version. Just find something else. So in terms of actual continuations of the franchise, I mean, there are prequels and that sort of thing. It feels like the Chronicles of Riddick as a franchise has more to give outside the world of the films. With the media, which was released that wasn't films, a lot better received. There's an animated short film called The Chronicles of Riddick, Dark Fury, which was released in 2004 and bridges the gap between the first two films. Some people wanted us to watch that. Maybe we could do that for follow-ups for our Patreon. There was also an Xbox and PC game released as a tie-in to the second film, set before the first film, called The Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. Have you heard of this game?
No.
No? It is considered one of the best games on Xbox.
Okay.
They actually mention Butcher Bay in The Chronicles of Riddick. It's another prison planet. There was a remake in 2009 called The Chronicles of Riddick, Assault on Dark Athena. There are also novels, comics, and a TV special called Into Pitch Black, which was released before the first film and is apparently, it's like a documentary set in the world of the series.
Okay.
All of these are examples of really the only reason you'd use such a gaudy and prestigious word as chronicles. They don't feel like chronicles, you know?
Yeah, hello.
So yeah, I think there is some interesting stuff outside of the movies. Maybe one of the only examples where it's like, the movies are shit, look at the other stuff. There is also a fourth film in development. As recently as July of 2019, Diesel announced that he'd received Tui's script. The working title is Riddick 4, Furia, as in Fury A. And I am not interested in that and will never watch it unless for the podcast. And also, fuck you, Riddick, for putting a 4 in your fourth movie when none of the others have a number in them. So yeah, that is our conversation on The Chronicles of Riddick. Bit of a strange, shorter episode. Well, not that much shorter, but we do have to do our favourite segment still, Richard, which is ranking dat franchise over at letterboxd.com/coldpopshire, where now, we've very begrudgingly...
You're being facetious there. When you said it was our favorite,
right?
Because this segment Fucking sucks.
You hate it. We both hate it.
I hate it.
We talked about it recently. Yeah, we've basically forced ourselves into ranking each franchise. And here we go again. I want to stop it, but I can't just stop it now. I want to adapt it or do something, but until we reach a proper solid idea, I don't think we should stop ranking. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we have got all the franchises we've ever watched. I'm going to add Pitch Black, not The Chronicles of Riddick, just to be cheeky, to this, to represent the whole series. And we're going to rank it with the 136 franchises we've watched for this podcast. What are you thinking? It's going to be pretty low.
Yeah, genuinely, I think this should be next to Critters.
Where's Critters?
It's 97.
That's a lot higher than I was thinking, but I can understand that. But above or below Critters?
Below. Critters had Power of the Night, that song. It was actually right. Really good.
All right, well, we are
Power
ranking
of the Night,
The Chronicles of Riddick as the 98th best franchise we've ever watched between Critters and The Nutty Professor. So there we go. We've saved it there. Why is this list private? Did we make it private as a joke?
Oh, I made it private last week for some reason. As a joke.
Shall
I publicize it? Okay. It was to hide where Rocky went, I think.
Okay.
So I made it private because on the last podcast, we were like, should we delete this list? And we talked about it. And then I made it private so that it would appear it had been deleted. Although I said on the podcast, should we make it private so it will appear it has been deleted? And you said you can't do that now because you've mentioned it, but I did it anyway.
And that's an example of me respecting you as an artist.
I did something.
That's the only way it'll happen. Sorry, buddy.
Sorry, champ.
So now the only thing we've got left to do is we're going to select our next franchise that we're going to watch over the next fortnight. And this week it is from our Patreon. If you donate to our Patreon $1 or more, you can actually suggest and vote on every second franchise we do. And if you want, and as some people have done this week, not naming who, you can make multiple $1 accounts and boost your own ideas and your own suggestions. And you might think that's cheating. You might think that's paying to win. Yep. It absolutely is. But you're the one giving
us
money.
Real world.
You're the one giving us money. I'm not going to say no, you can't do that.
Also, just as of this way, if you've been hesitant about joining the Patreon because you don't want money coming out of your account every month, we've just enabled you can buy an annual subscription. So you get a little bit of a discount if you buy a year. So instead of paying $1 a month, you could pay $12 now. It's less than $12 because you get a discount. But yeah, if you just want to do one lump sum and then have a year's worth of Patreon, you can do that now.
It's only our dollar tier though. There are other tiers which you can't pay in lump sum.
No, you can.
Oh, you can pay them in lump sum.
Yeah, you can. But okay. Obviously it'd be more than $12 because it's more money.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so quite a heated debate. Have you got it open?
I have got it up in here.
So quite a heated vote as usual. But before we reveal what has won and what will be the next franchise, I do just want to say that if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/cultpopshire. You can also, if you can't donate, you can join our Discord where you can discuss all these films with us. We love discussing these films and discussing our podcast with people who like it. It's always such a treat to meet a new or a lurker fan who comes out of the woodwork to say, hey, I've been listening for years. I found you guys when you did Earbud. That's always really nice to hear. So please don't hesitate to do that. You can also follow us on all the bullshit social media places that are actively destroying the world and the minds of the youth. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those sorts of places you can find us, as well as on Letterboxd. Oh, there's links to all these places in the show notes. Richard, what is next franchise, next Fortnite franchise?
Alrighty, so this was an interesting one. Like last franchise we did, or not franchise, Patreon vote we did, that Rocky one was an intensely fought. It was like, things were slipping in and out. This one...
it was actually a stalemate that we had to break the tie on the day to select Rocky.
But we had to... for this one, it was like Bill and Ted took an immediate... lead. Mm-hmm. So and stayed there for quite some time. However, It's worth mentioning as well, the Karate Kid and Rambo were nipping at the heels of Bill and Ted. But then the Dark Horse came up from behind and has actually gone on to secure the victory.
Mm.
And that is the anime franchise, Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Mm. Something that was being talked about a lot in our Discord this week, to the point where I had to make a new server for people to talk about it because
a new channel, not a whole server.
A new channel, because a bunch of people were very passionate, and everyone else in the Discord was like, "I do not care." and so I did not expect it to end up being now the subject for the next couple of weeks on the Discord, as this franchise I know. Oh my god, I know so little about this. I'm very nervous. Everyone's saying like, "Oh, I can't wait to see AJ's reaction to the ending of this." And it's like, okay, I'm sure I'll have a reaction. That's what some of you literally pay me to do.
And me.
Yeah, both of us.
I'm not going to give you a foot massage either.
Have you seen these? I know nothing. Okay, giant robots.
It's like mechs, but it's one of those things that's like similar to, say, the likes of BoJack Horseman, that it's like, yeah, it's these giant robots fighting each other, but it's actually about like depression and all this stuff. Like, apparently it gets very deep. I've started the show a couple of times, enjoyed it quite a lot both times, but just something else has taken its place, and then it's become too long that I would have to start the show again. I am gonna go start the anime now. It's only 26 episodes. I've been meaning to watch it for a long time, and finally need to do it. But the movies we're going to be covering, because also this is the whole thing about Evangelion, is that the show like crapped the bed in the last two episodes, as far as I'm aware. And so they made the two, was covering six movies. The first one is actually two movies. This is my understanding of it.
So confusing.
So the first one is two movies, which is, and it's called Death and Rebirth. So it's, Death is like a retelling of the first 24 episodes of the show, and Rebirth is a retelling of episodes 25 and 26, altered slightly. The Rebirth stuff would then go on to become part of, it's like unfinished. He's like, "Oh, let's put out what we've got already." And then that became the end of Evangelion, which is the second movie we'll be watching. Is like one movie. The first is two movies. The first one of which is a recap of the show. The second one of which would then be later reworked into the end of Evangelion, which is the second movie. And then the end of Evangelion was like his second attempt at finishing the franchise. And then he made the rebuild of Evangelion, which the most recent of which only came out a couple months ago. And this is like a retelling of the entire story, but now he's not depressed when he made it. this could be wrong, but this is my understanding of it as before going into it.
You're hosting this one, mate. I can't even be bothered watching them, let alone understanding what I'm talking about. Tune in. I'm sure some people are going to be bloody ecstatic that we're covering these, and I'm sure a hefty majority will not listen to the episode. I'm sure it's probably an even split at this point. So we'll see what happens. Are these easy movies to find?
I think Death and End are on Netflix.
Okay.
And I think the others are on Amazon Prime.
Okay. Alright, well, there you go, everybody. Tune in next fortnight to hear that episode. And stay tuned for the post-credit scene after the music you're hearing now stops playing. And thank you so much for listening to us talk about how bad this trilogy of Vin Diesel movies is. I hope you enjoyed it. All right, welcome along to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, tell me, who's it from and what is it this week?
All right, today's post-credit scene comes to us from Sarah Valling. It's not phrased as a question, but it says, something relatively unimportant that you still regret. My entire life.
relatively unimportant.
Yeah. And like, do you have an answer? Because I have quite a long thing I want to go into.
What I had for dinner tonight. Still regret it.
What did you have?
I made a steak, but I overcooked it real bad.
Damn. Should have slopped it up.
I should have.
Okay, so like, obviously, you know, it's somewhat joking to say my entire life, but my God, I am so bad at like dwelling on past things and,
right,
you know, like imagining diverting paths and like just different decisions I could have made.
What
yeah,
if?
Exactly. Like even ones that like I'm objectively in a better place now, there's still some part of me that like I can't get over the fact that like, what if I'd done something differently? Especially like, so in high school, I was such a fuck. I was such a little fuck. Like, hated who I was in high school. And in year 13, the final year of high school, I kind of started to become, a better person and start to more, I guess, resemble the person I am today. But I, after high school, I didn't go straight. I applied for broadcasting school, but I didn't get into it. And I did an acting course for 2 years, which I've mentioned a few times, called Hagley Theatre Company. And there is like really, really very much where I evolved as a person and became a completely different person. I developed empathy, you know, even though I still wouldn't necessarily say I'm the most empathetic person in the world. And it's like, and I think I became a lot more self-aware. Even when I look at those first few weeks at Hagley and the first impressions I made at people with people, I look back on those and I regret it. But I this is also where I met fan of the podcast Tyler Braley, member of the Coldpopshire family Aaron Richardson, and frequent guest and collaborator David Correos. And made these like lifelong friends there. And while we were at Hagley Theatre Company, there was each year they do two plays, like two full length plays, kind of thing. And there was two tutors, Cam and Daryl. And Cam would put on like the very serious plays, whereas Daryl kind of did a lot more like fun kind of plays. And I always like responded more to being in Daryl's plays. And I managed to across my 2 years, eight plays put on, I managed to be in all four of Daryl's plays. I was cast in one of Cam's and then someone pulled out of the course and I ended up doing Cam and Daryl's plays. And so I was the only person that got to be in all four of his plays. I owe a lot to Hagley Theatre Company and especially like my experiences. And I just found out today that Daryl, that tutor, is incredibly ill and has at most a few days left to live. And so I just wanted to take some time at the end of this podcast, especially when it's this like super, super informative time for me, and it actually ties into the post-credits scene that Sarah suggested. And for people that are involved in the Coldpopshire podcast, that's like this podcast wouldn't exist if I hadn't gone to Hagley Theatre Company and if I hadn't, you know, worked under Daryl for those plays. It was news that I got this morning, and I've kind of been in a weird mood all day about it. Because also, he was a very cheeky kind of guy, and I haven't kept in touch with him really because on my last few days at Hagley, I added him on Facebook. He didn't accept me, but he accepted Dave, and I asked him why, and he said, well, Dave's going to be famous. He was
right.
He was right, yeah. So, there's just, I don't know, sorry to bring down the episode, but yeah, did it on the post-credits scene rather
Diesel.
Than...
Sorry, Vin Diesel. Sorry to ruin the episode for you, Vin Diesel.
Mm.
I appreciate that man, I'm sorry to hear that. To Daryl,
yeah,
raises glass.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Should we cut it there? You all right?
Yeah.
All right.